Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to TF3. This week we're talking about the Champions League. There's a live Q&A in the middle, apparently done over a Guinness and a beer, and we're going to finish it all off with some more content. It's good to have Nico and Chris here. Nico, good to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And of course, Chris Hennage, journalist, man, the myth, the legend.
Evening.
It's very good to have you guys. Let's get straight down to it. The Champions League and, of course, Europa League have both happened. There's been a lot of exciting stuff going on there. The massive result coming out of that, 3-1 at Wembley to Spurs against... a less than impressive Real Madrid team at the moment, Chris. But I think obviously when you go back-to-back as Champions League champions, that comes with a huge weight to it. And at this point in the season, there's a lot of times where that may have weighed a little too strong on the likes of Zidane and Ronaldo. And for some weird reason, at this point, they really look out of sorts.
They do. I think it's something like 30 games, 30 group games or something they've been unbeaten in. And yet their qualification last season wasn't tremendous, if you remember. They had a tough time against, I think it was Legia Warsaw in Poland. And it's easy to pull out numbers and say, well, this is a huge cause for concern the first time that Zidane has lost back-to-back games as Real Madrid manager. In, I admit, a very brief career as a coach. I think what is concerning if you're a Real Madrid fan is how tepid they looked. I think we can praise Spurs, rightly so, for exacting a game plan and knowing what they wanted to do and being very organised and diligent, and particularly the performance of Harry Winks in the middle, someone who I think was a lot less cautious than he was at the Bernabeu, which is totally understandable. I'm certainly not criticising him when I say that. You look at just the first goal, for example, his pass to Trippier. It's one of those weird things where when you look at stats on websites like Squawker and who scored, he won't necessarily get credit for the part that he plays in that build-up. But it's still a hugely influential moment. And I think, yeah, that's my concern watching Real Madrid, is that there was just moments where the likes of Ramos and Casemiro and Cruz and Modric, they just didn't seem up for it. I know that it sounds like a huge cop-out of an intangible when we discuss this kind of thing. I just didn't see something from them. And you have to think maybe there's just a little bit of wear and tear from what they've done, because it's I guess since Zidane has come in, it's almost felt non-stop. You know, it's been a Champions League, Club World Cup, La Liga, all these things constantly moving forward that have had to try and be delicately balanced. And eventually, I think it's caught up with them a little bit. Saying that, you look at the landscape of their group, I think there's no chance that they don't qualify. Yes, they'll go second, which means theoretically they have a harder path from the knockout stages up. But I still think you would be naive to consider them out of the tournament or out of the latter stages, at least, just because of this fall.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, Nico? Because obviously what Chris brings up there, there's a lot of conflict within that for a lot of people who are trying to write at the moment. What I do find interesting, what I've maybe been picking over the bones of and listening to other journalists speak about Real Madrid and people talk about Real Madrid in the past, a lot of the management, and I'm not trying to take away from what Zidane said, I think what Zidane did was very good. A lot of the on-field management was very often done by a lot of those experienced players who had excellent game management skills. And they were backed up. And they, you know, like a lot of people talking about the deep squad, talking about losing Hammers, talking about losing a couple of other key influential figures, maybe off the pitch as well. But Zidane has made some changes formationally during games where you think, so for instance, there have been a few games where when they've been in a difficult position, he's gone, I'll change the formation and match up against the other side. And we're a more powerful side, so maybe we'll do better. And that's not worked. Whereas in previous seasons it did work, or you know, there were very small changes where it would negate what the opposition did. And I think, you know, even Dave last season was sort of, you know, speaking about the levels of genius that he was going through, and at times it felt a bit hyperbolic. And I guess they are fantastic, and a lot of people like me have tipped them at the beginning of the season because we thought, well, you know, Barcelona aren't looking as strong as they did. There's a lot of small problems which might trip them up. But there is something about it that now people like Pochettino, there's a few clever managers who have come up with solutions to the Zidane system.
Yeah, I think maybe to hone in specifically to what you're talking about in terms of Zidane's tactical changes, I think there is relevance to what Chris is saying in terms of some of their better players not necessarily looking up for it. I would say that this is one of those games that I think it was the first time in a couple of years that I've actually seen Toni Kroos not be amazing. Some of his passwords were wayward, which is really, you know, not characteristic of a player of his quality, as well as Luka Modric to look a little bit lost. And I wouldn't say that Toni Kroos's form was necessarily by design or affected by Spurs in a major way. But I would say that, you know, like you're mentioning, Pochettino's a clever manager and he sort of worked out how he can best combat this this really effective Real Madrid formation and system. And I think the best thing that Spurs can take away from this performance is the communication that their back line shared, which is a really important thing to do when you're playing against the likes of Benzema and Ronaldo. I think for a number of years now, what they've really thrived from is having really athletic fullbacks and center backs to some extent, but more importantly, fullbacks. And then that combining with the off-ball movement of someone like Benzema and Ronaldo. And so when you're dealing with these two players, it's really important that your back line is connected through communication, because regardless of the sport that you're looking at, the most efficient defenses communicate. And that's what Eric Dier, that's what, Sanchez and Toby Alderweireld, while he was in the game, were doing really effectively. And that's how they negated that. And not only that, but they were able to communicate so well that they held a really high line and used that as a basis for their pressing. And that really disheveled Real Madrid, because more often than not, they can impose themselves upon their opposition. They can get their fullbacks forward. And I think that is the major thing here, is that they were able to make Real Madrid uncomfortable. And then when Zidane adjusted tactically, when he put Marcelo and Hakimi higher up the pitch to squeeze in Spurs's wingbacks and cause some issues, that's when Spurs really advanced, because the best time to advance on an attacking formation is when their fullbacks have completely gone up the field, because then they're the most open that they can be. And Tottenham were able to enact, you know, some really efficient counterattacks. So I think Zidane tried to adjust the game to the game as well as he could. But Pochettino was simply waiting for it. It was a trap that he had set. So it was a really impressive performance for me defensively from Spurs. But another thing that I'd also like to highlight was, you know, Eric Dier's flexibility is another thing that, you know, we talked about in the earlier pod this week. Is a thing that was a major effect on this game, because maybe as we saw in some of the other Champions League games, when a player goes out of the formation, the starting 11, that can completely change the tactical idea, or maybe you have to go with different personnel for your preferred tactical idea, and that can really mess things up. Whereas Eric Dier slotting in for Toby Alderweireld in that three-man or five-man central defense didn't change the tactical idea at all, and didn't change the performance of that tactical idea. And that was so important, because then they didn't have to make a major change. So Pochettino really came to play that day, and I think he did it exceptionally well.
Yeah, it certainly is an interesting one. I think it's been fantastic for Spurs in that sense as well. And looking forward to the weekend and Spurs, there's I mean, they're playing Crystal Palace this weekend, Chris. It couldn't be more of a contrast for them.
Yeah, and I think it's funny that a lot of Spurs fans are all almost expecting, even if they're joking when they say expecting to lose 1-0 to an Andros Townsend goal or something silly like that. I think this is where continuity is huge for Spurs, because I think, look, I've said fairly recently on Twitter that I think sometimes we are too binary in our assessments of situations, that 1 minute Pochettino's a bit of a failure for losing against Man United. Now he's a success again because he's beat Real Madrid. I think what you have to do is you have to stand back and look at things holistically and assess that, yes, his record against the top six is a problem, but also consistency from Champions League to Premier League, that transition is not something he's always managed very well. And I think this is where he has to now stand up and take a game which is, I think, very, very winnable for Tottenham, and get the job done. Because in a lot of ways, this game is set up very well for Crystal Palace, because I hope I'm using the terms correctly here. Hodgson likes to use a deep block. Did I say that right, Nico? I believe so.
Yeah, he's sort of a medium block, deeper block manager at times. Yeah,
awesome stuff. And he will counterattack.
Sometimes he likes to drop a block.
And what I've seen is he'll try and use counterattacks. He'll try and get the likes of Zaha, Townsend, Loftus-Cheek in positions where they have space to run into, because that's where players like that thrive. And then if Kabai can put them into those positions from a deeper role in the heart of midfield alongside Milojevic, then it's where they find more success, I think, Crystal Palace. And so how do then Spurs manage that, with the fact that there's going to be some tiredness in there? That's totally normal. Yet you have to lead the game. Palace aren't going to come out and attack. If anything, they'd be quite happy with a point from Spurs. So I think, yeah, this is another interesting examination and almost another puzzle piece, if you will, into the bigger picture that is Mauricio Pochettino at Spurs.
Elsewhere, Nico, obviously Chelsea had quite a conclusive loss midweek to Roma. Roma themselves, though, didn't look fantastic. And I think in some ways that's going to be encouraging to Chelsea, that they'll feel like they lost out on small margins in this game. But then certain players also admitting that that's very frustrating, because they didn't feel like the team had the drive in the second half to make up the difference between those small margins and, you know, the great El Shaarawy double in the first half, and then topped off by Diego Perotti in the second to make it 3-0 to Roma. And essentially mean that Chelsea are only, well, I mean, that they're not in the driving seat that they wanted to be in.
Yeah, I mean, as you're saying there, I think this is more of a game that Chelsea lost as opposed to one that Roma won. Neither side was particularly brilliant, and I think the majority of the goals that Chelsea conceded were down to stupid mistakes. I think the third goal was really a really good Roma counterattack, but the first two were kind of stupidities that they weren't able to rectify. And, you know, I think there are encouraging signs there for Chelsea to a certain extent, because they can look at themselves and say, we know we can perform better than that. But at the same time, I think this is sort of, as I mentioned maybe a few weeks ago, this is sort of where I believe Conte's ideas and team really start to implode, because he doesn't seem to have too many ideas outside of his first 11. And when he plays players and when he does certain things that don't incorporate the key aspects of that formation, the key players in that formation and that tactical idea, then they can look really flat. And I think that's what we saw against Roma, is that we haven't seen too many like amazing comebacks from Chelsea, because I think once Antonio Conte is beaten from the first whistle, in a sense, if the tactical idea is better, as we've seen Jose Mourinho do against him last season, then it's very difficult for Conte to chase a game, because it doesn't seem like he can cope very well. And so that's sort of where I start to worry about this Chelsea team, is that they're so thin, they don't have the greatest depth of squad. And then in terms of tactical idea, they're very thin. I just kind of worry about not only their Champions League aspirations, but their league aspirations. Because as we've seen and we've talked about a number of times from Chelsea, is that they have a very short-sighted model, which I don't necessarily think is a criticism, but I think, you know, we could see a shorter period for Antonio Conte than maybe we originally thought when they were lifting that Premier League trophy.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I mean, obviously, we'll see this weekend when they play Manchester United. Big game for them, really big game. And obviously, big game for Manchester United, Chris, who won 2-0 against Benfica. A very promising Benfica side, and the Benfica side who sit bottom of the Champions League group on 0 points, but still there's some youth in there. They're trying to make the most of that. And obviously, sorry for Spiller and the other guys who've maybe twice lost out to a Manchester United side who didn't look exceptional. But Manchester United march on, and Mourinho again sort of banging on about the fact that he has given young guys a break in the team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not entirely sure if that's true. He had that famous, was it 49 players list? That pointed to great players he'd debut, but there was a number of those that were literally 1 minute introductions and things like that. I think, look, there's almost an irony, I think, in the discussion around Mourinho at the minute, that people are so desperate to point to any criticism he's got as being proof that there is an anti-Mourinho agenda. I don't personally feel like that's the case. I think that he has a very distinct set of skills, to sound like a Liam Neeson movie, which are pragmatic, reactionary, and not always about dictating the play. I think it was at Real Madrid where kind of he rubbed some of the players up the wrong way with his approach to the games against Barcelona, about trying to make them make mistakes instead of taking the ball and leading things. And I think that's the same reason that I give him credit for winning against Tottenham with what was a very direct goal that exploited what's usually quite a tight defence, and at the same time can then say, but I think sometimes his reactionary tactics leave a little bit to be desired, like the game against Liverpool. I don't think you can just sit and say, well, he beat Tottenham, so now that's a credible point and it makes sense. It's not, though. That's not how it works for me. I think, again, you have to build out a bigger picture. And just because I criticised Mourinho in the context of the Liverpool game, or the fact that I don't necessarily agree with his assertion that he brings through young players, that doesn't mean that I think he's a bad manager. I think he's a very good manager. And I think he's been quite fortunate to have a really good financial backing that's given him a lot of flexibility in the transfer market to get the likes of Lukaku, to get the likes of Pogba, because those are central figures to his team. And I think that's perhaps where the feeling I have in regards to his reactionary tactic stems from, because to me, if you're able to buy players like that almost with a blank check, if you will, that makes me think, okay, you should be able to buy the kind of versatility that lets you dominate a game and not. And I think that's the thing, is when you look at that Liverpool game, I know it is harped on about so much, that game is picked on because that's when they stopped sort of hammering teams 4-0 and the momentum seemed to go a little bit. Mm. And then you have the Huddersfield loss, and then you have this Benfica game where, again, they won, so job done completely. But they did make hard work of it at the same time. Those two statements can be true. And I think that's the problem, is everyone's after such a definitive, well, we won, that's all that matters. Well, we have a trophy, that's all that matters. Yeah, but that's realistically where people like us earn our money, is by being able to say, well, okay, yes, you won a trophy, but there were some concerning elements here that if allowed to grow and fester could develop into bad things in the future. We're almost expected to predict some of the future. So if we just go along and say, well, they beat Benfica, there's nothing to worry about, they'll be fine at the weekend too, that to me is a very superficial analysis of what is quite a complex situation.
Yeah, and that's true. I guess also that it's... What is great is when you can say we won the title and no one can really reply to that. You know, I mean, you know, what would be lovely is if you could say we won the title and people say, yeah, and they're great champions as well, because that must be the really, really frustrating side, is obviously you know, if Manchester United win it this year. Weirdly, people never really said that against Ferguson, even though it wasn't always the most enterprising football that he played, but no one really said that against Ferguson. They never sort of said, yes, but your team is boring. Do you know what I mean? He was more famous for grinding out results. I guess it's also partly because now the trend is not for playing one-dimensional simple football. It's for complex, or what's seen as complex, personally motivated, you know, man management, fantastic, all these elements, but it almost with a Pep Guardiola end rather than a Mourinho end. And he's less trendy now, I guess, would be the point. That doesn't take away from what you're saying, but he is a lot less trendy, I guess.
But there are, as you both are sort of mentioning, there are, like, you know, fallacies to every philosophy. And just because one is succeeding right now doesn't necessarily mean that we haven't criticized it in the past. Obviously, the majority of the criticism that we've seen of Pep Guardiola in the Premier League came last season, where we talked about, you know, his need for him to maybe abandon his ideals and stop playing out of the back so much because of the mistakes that some of the Manchester City players were making. And now, because he's stuck with those ideas, I think I'm sort of with that train of thought, you know, he's enjoying more success because the players understand how to do that in, you know, huge pressure situations. And I think what Chris is talking about is exactly right. His philosophy and what he genuinely believes to be the best way to go about winning a football match is, you know, provoking mistakes and never risking anything. And that's genuinely how he plays football, regardless of how expensive the players are. So I think, you know, that's just how he's going to play football. And that will be successful against some of the bigger teams, and that will leave something to be desired against the Crystal Palaces or the Huddersfields of the world because of the way that they like to attack. But each philosophy of football, I think, has its criticisms and has its exploitations. It's just how we view it at that certain moment that I think guides sort of our criticism of it.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I guess there's also what you don't want to do is, obviously, you don't want to get too high and mighty about it. I don't think anyone on this podcast has, but I think also at the same time, I would be very quick to challenge the people who then look down on other stars of football because they think that suddenly, I mean, especially Manchester United fans this season, and certainly some of the Manchester United analysis has become very one-dimensional.
Why are you guys getting
your knickers in a twist? Why are you guys so angry about it? Because the fact is, Mourinho came into the league, and you know, you can use Mourinho's own quotes against him. Is he said things? I think they drew, or maybe they lost to Spurs. And one of his post-game quotes was, "Well, only one team came to play." And you think, well,
yeah, and
okay, well, and then how does that philosophy work? How's that now? You know.
Yeah, and I think the media narrative surrounding him and the criticisms that he's faced, however large or for however many people write about it, is kind of what he will battle for his entire career and what he has battled in press conferences. You know, we saw in the win over Tottenham recently that he shushed the camera because of, you know, he's insistent on this style of play. And Guardiola is the same way. It's just he goes about it in a different way. These guys are fundamentally ingrained with these ideas in their head because of where they've gotten to in their careers perpetuating those ideas. So I think they're always fighting these inner demons into a sense, like, of how they view football and how they genuinely believe that it's the, you know, it's the end all be all in terms of how to play the game.
That's interesting. Okay. I slightly disagree with that, but I see your point. And I think there's a number of ways you can take it. I think in the future, Mourinho will be remembered as somewhat of a hero. Because of maybe the people he was seen to come up against, and maybe in time when history plays out and there's, you know, the fullness of history, we'll see Mourinho maybe in a slightly different light, sort of battling some of the things, the wrongs of, or some of the ills of football. And at the same time, if it's your team doing it, I think there's very often you see it different. It's the same with diving. It's the same with any of those things, isn't it? Like, I guess it's just also you pair it with, and if you pair it up with all that money, you sort of think, well, I want to see a different end result, you know. And I guess there's a lot of issues for there's huge issues for it, and I think the biggest problem is there's too many sensitive people who upset, who get very upset in the meantime, retweet you with quotes. So there's Man City Napoli, Nico. Now this was possibly the tie that everyone had looked forward to most when the Champions League was drawn, because it was Man City versus Napoli. It was two similar ideologies going up against each other. Arguably both of them enacted in slightly different ways, because one had spent more money, and I'm not saying that's negative, but one had spent more money and the other felt like it had been coached in a very different way. And even Pep Guardiola himself has sort of called this one of the biggest achievements for his Man City team, because they faced up against what he says is one of the best sides in Europe and possibly the best team he says he's ever faced.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are sort of taking that like he doesn't mean that, and I think he very much does. I think he genuinely believes that this is one of the best teams he's faced because of the style of football that is so similar to what he believes is sort of the correct way to play football, as I sort of just touched on. But I think this tie did live up to the hype. You could see sort of at the beginning of each period of play, the teams were just going at each other right at the beginning. You know, it was extremely high pressing. It was a very fast paced game that was played in a very small area of the pitch because of the high line that each team were holding. And I think in the first game, Manchester City enjoyed some success in the first half by playing through Napoli's press. And I think part of that was down to the fact that they didn't have their first 11 out there. They didn't have their preferred 11. They were missing Jorginho and Alan. And then in the second half of that game, when Alan came on, the pressing was way better. They were able to hold a much higher line because of the confidence in their pressing, and the game sort of changed. In this game, I think it was unfortunate for Napoli, and maybe this is something that's going to affect them in a major way. Manchester City did not try to play through their high pressing actions. They actually tried to utilize the long ball to push the Napoli high line back, which obviously would decrease the effectiveness of Napoli's pressing and offer more space to some of their pacier players like Raheem Sterling and Leroy Sané. They weren't able to do that successfully because of how well drilled that Napoli back line was. And then as soon as Fawzi Ghulam pulled up with an injury, unfortunately, that has been confirmed as a full ACL tear, a full rupture. You know, they weren't able to do the same thing with Christian Maggio on the right-hand side, and they shifted over Husin to the left-hand side. But it was still a really good game, and I think this is the statement rings true, which is this was a really big test, because really, as we're finding out about this Manchester City team, there's not necessarily that many ways to beat them as there was last season. And one of the ways that I think you can disrupt them is by really matching their pressing and doing it effectively. If you can match their pressing and do it sort of as aggressively and as effectively as they do it, then you have a really solid chance at beating them. And Napoli certainly showed that in the first leg. And so fortunate that they couldn't show it for 90 minutes in the second leg. But yeah, you know, I think it was a great tie, and unfortunately for Ghulam and Napoli, they'll be missing him, and I think that's a major part of their team. But you know, I thought it was a great tie.
Elsewhere, PSG won 5-0, a hat trick for Cassava and Verratti, getting a goal alongside Neymar as well. That group now looks as if it's wrapped up for PSG and Munich, considering the number of games they play. Of course, Celtic could catch Munich up there, but they will not catch PSG. It's just a case of whether Munich can catch PSG at the top of that group. But it's still very competitive between Chelsea and Roma, 1 point between them. Atletico Madrid, just one win away from one of those two guys. So there's still a lot to play for in these groups, is what I'm saying. Of course, Liverpool won 3-0 against Maribor. All the goals came in the second half. Liverpool didn't look quite as incisive. No Coutinho, but they had Sturridge. Sturridge scored, Firmino, and a lot of the other players looked very static. But in the end, Liverpool got through. And again, Nico, it goes back to a lot of the old problems that you've been listing on the podcast. So I don't feel we need to go over that. And that is some real common ground now that you and I have found going over the same plot points over and over again. There is certainly a lot there to go over time after time.
Can I introduce a new plot point?
I'd love to hear one.
Not specifically, I think, relating to Klopp, but perhaps you could maybe throw them in there as well. Looking at the landscape of the Champions League, we've talked about Real Madrid stuttering, Barcelona drew against Olympiacos, Juventus drew against Sporting as well. And
tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Buying, obviously, won, but it's a little bit of an uncertain time, if you will, for them with Ancelotti leaving and Hankers coming in. It makes me wonder if we're going to see one of the aspiring elites win the Champions League this season. Because if you look at the two teams that I think have set the pace in the group stages, which, again, is no indicator of success, it's PSG and Man City. Because Man City just obliterated the best team in Serie A right now, at least in terms of the league standings, and the team that plays, I would say, the nicest football. And PSG have dismantled pretty much everyone in their group, including Bayern. So it leads me to wonder if we are going to have a situation where someone like PSG and maybe Man City, I guess you could throw Liverpool in there as well, does come up and sneak down the side, because it looks as if we're going to lose some decent teams early on. I mean, Dortmund are already book gone. I think Atletico are in a similar position. So it's, yeah, I think for once the Champions League might not be as formulaic as it has been in recent years.
That's a very good point, actually, yeah. And the same maybe goes for Europa League, where Arsenal are battling it away. Chris 0-0 tonight with Red Star Belgrade. Obviously a difficult side to face, much more difficult when you go to Serbia rather than when they come to London. 0-0, Sky Sports tonight carry an article with the headline, "On the day he was left out of the England squad, Jack Wilshere shows he's ready for the big stage again." No.
Why not?
It's one performance where they've got zero goals.
You made a valid point there.
I like Jack Wilshere, but I think bringing him back to the England setup too soon, I don't know, it just doesn't make any sense. Although, I mean, surely maybe this is the right time to test out these kind of players. And maybe at this point, Southgate has already got his favourite guys. It might be too late for Jack at this point. I'd love to see Jack Wilshere back for England, but just not based on the performances that he's had, surely. And people say, well, other people haven't performed particularly well. Maybe Jack Wilshere does also suffer from currently being an Arsenal player and, having not particularly well formed identity as a side yet, at least publicly or outwardly. I imagine there's a lot of talking behind the scenes. Has anyone else seen the back, or is it the back? It might be the back or the front page of Marker.
I was just looking at that.
Yeah. It was Santi Cazorla who
apparently his foot gangrened after surgery, and it is, they're apparently saying he'll be lucky if he can walk.
Yeah. Which is that insane. A skin graft? I mean, it looks horrific and sounds horrific. I think he will walk just because he's incredible. But I mean, that's amazing, isn't it, Chris, that in the modern day a footballer gangrene after surgery.
Yeah, he's said to have lost 8 centimeters of his tendon as well, which I would imagine will have to influence him in some way. And I mean, you just have to look at the photograph on the cover there to kind of
Is that a photograph, or do you think that's a Photoshop? I'm only trying to work it out.
To me, it looks like a photograph. It doesn't. I mean, you're probably the more of the expert here. I think even if it's used to illustrate the situation, just those basic facts, 8 operations, 8 centimeters of tendon, almost losing your foot, I think that paints the severity of the situation quite easily.
Yeah, very much so. A tragic situation. And obviously, Santi Cazorla is such a a well-liked player, I think, within the game, and obviously within the Spain setup as well. I think he really is well-liked, and obviously at Arsenal he played such a key role. It's certainly very interesting to see where this one goes and how Arsenal handle it, how he handles it himself. And obviously everyone wishes him the best. We all want to see him back playing football. He played like beautiful football in the time that he was playing last. Anything else you guys want to throw out there before we go to the Q&A very quickly from Adam and Dave earlier on? Excellent.
Sean Dyche to Everton?
That's going to come up immediately after this. Sean Dyche to Everton will be covered in the final section of the podcast. In the meantime, Adam and Dave sat down by the river after a lovely football tournament that they took part in, and this is what they had to say.
It's part two, the Q&A with myself and Statman Dave. Something a little bit different this week. We actually recorded this live earlier at the pub on the river in London with a couple of pints. It was perfect. Taking your questions on Periscope and Twitter. So without further ado, enjoy.
So here we go.
Let's get to the Q&A.
So is the Spurs winning the Champions League reaction stream? Yes. Spurs have officially now won the Champions League. We beat the European champions.
So you are reigning European champions?
I think so. That's how it works. Here's the first question, a proper question from 01 Ryan Dawson. It says, which win was better, Spurs or City? Of course, Spurs beating the European champions at Wembley last night 3-1. City, after a 2-2 draw, it was, I believe, with Napoli, they came back to win 4-2. What do you think was the more impressive?
Spurs was impressive. I think it was tactically very good from Pochettino. Again, you're seeing the change in side of Pochettino's teams. They're playing a lot more on the counter-attack, but it really worked against Real Madrid. Real Madrid, you know, playing this narrow diamond against the three at the back system, for me, is crazy stuff.
Crazy.
But then you've got the likes of Dele Alli, Christian Eriksen, Harry Kane, all playing very well together. So yeah, I'd say Spurs, more impressive in a way. I think the next question was about City, and do they have any weaknesses? I think that if you went with a diamond in midfield and went man-to-man and then used your sort of centre-halves in between their full-backs to pin their full-backs back, it would restrict them in that final third and you could play out. Like, similar to what Mourinho did last season with Mkhitaryan in a diamond, but then he only tried that for like 10 minutes, but it worked really well. So I think a diamond against this Manchester City team is similar to the Barcelona team that absolutely smashed people Messi. If you play a diamond in midfield, it will restrict Manchester City.
So the question we had there, I believe, was, are you happy with Manchester United right now? Obviously, there's a lot of criticism in the media over Mourinho and his tactics. I believe Mourinho has come out with a rather interesting quote today about how, you know, Spurs beat Liverpool 4-1, they beat Real Madrid 3-1, they need some credit for this. He's come out and saying some quite strange things, I think, Jose Mourinho. He's not doing himself any favours. But are you happy as a Manchester United fan with the way Manchester United are playing at the moment?
Yeah, where are they in the league? They're second. They've scored the second most goals. They've conceded the fewest goals in the Premier League. It's a different Manchester United, I think that's the thing.
Do you think, though, that results are, Jesus Christ, this thing is so bright, you might have to hold it.
Yeah.
Do you think results are the be-all and the end-all, though? Should it not be... It doesn't have to be one or the other. There can be a happy medium between performances and results.
I think at the moment for Manchester United, it is about results, unfortunately. And that is what United need right now, is they need to win things again. They need to get competitive. And getting there through being defensive and being counter-attacking, for me, is absolutely fine. Of course, there's certain things, like players like Mkhitaryan could be rotated a bit better. I thought it was a fantastic start of the season, but needed a bit of a rest. And now this new system, the 3-4-1-2, Jesse Lingard can be used as number 10, and he's still very effective. So quite frankly, I think it's just about rotating these attackers, getting the likes of Martial and Rashford in the right games.
Mm. I think there was a question there a second ago. I can't remember who said it. It disappeared before I could get their name. Who's going to win the Champions League for you? I mean, we're seeing now the group stages, how things are shaping up. It looks like PSG and potentially Man City are two of the favourites. I mean, Spurs maybe in there as well, unbeaten. But who do you think for you is going to win the Champions League? And I remember that question previously says, what's happening in Madrid? Who's going to win the Champions League?
Still going to say Real Madrid right now, even though they haven't played well against Spurs. I think the likes of Daniel Carvajal, when he's back, gives them a lot more in an attacking sense as well as in a defensive sense. I just think they'll find their luck. I think La Liga's pretty much gone for them.
Wow.
So now it's all about just the Champions League.
I think that it's going to be Manchester City or PSG. Hello. It's going to be Manchester City or PSG who are going to win. And I'm going to put my money on Manchester City right now.
City?
Yeah, I think
you
they're
disappoint
fantastic.
Me. Here's one. Not Tottenham Hotspur. The question we had before.
Wait, one more for you is, what's going wrong with Real Madrid right now? Because obviously they lost in the league at the weekend, losing to Spurs. But I think that was their first Champions League group stage defeat since 2012, in over 5 years. What do you think is going wrong from right now?
I think it is the tactics are the problem at the moment. You know, they set up with this diamond and they should have gone with a 4-3-3 against Spurs. That's how you kind of want to expose Spurs, is in those wide areas, have Cristiano Ronaldo there. Obviously the problem with Gareth Bale being out, but why is Asensio not starting maybe on the left-hand side, Ronaldo on the right? A lot of fluidity there. Even Vasquez, you know how Real Madrid did so well last season in the back end of games was switching to this 4-5-1 and counter-attacking. Vasquez on one flank, Asensio on the other, Ronaldo through the middle. Maybe it's moving to a 4-5-1 at the right time. A diamond works against 4-4-2s, you know, it gives that option to dodge the press. We saw what Toni Kroos did sort of behind Marcelo against both Juve, against Atletico last season. But Zidane needs a bit smarter with his tactics. He can't just play the diamond, he needs to play it at the right time.
Abdul, interesting question there. Can Arsenal stop City this Sunday?
Absolutely not.
It's a very good question.
There's so many holes in this. There's so many holes in their shape, especially behind Hector Bellerin. There's so much space, and City will just
destroy.
You know, you're thinking either who's going to play there, Leroy Sané, you think Raheem Sterling, someone's going to get in that space.
There's a question from Mouva Prudvi again. He says, if PSG wins the Champions League, is it the Ballon d'Or for Neymar? It's interesting, I've seen reports that Neymar's not 100% happy at PSG. There's reports coming out that he's regret leaving Barcelona. Obviously there's a whole Cavani drama situation going on. I don't know if they win the PSG, I think he'll be up. If they win the Champions League PSG, I think he'll be up in that contention. But do you think he will win the Ballon d'Or?
I think with PSG is that either his goals will carry them, or I think more likely it's going to be some big performances from their defenders, because they still are such a broken side. The likes of Mbappe, Cavani and Neymar, they don't track back. So it's going to be someone like Thiago Silva that may be the first defender to win the Ballon d'Or if PSG go that far and win
it.
And then you think in Brazil in the World Cup as well. So if he plays his cards right, Thiago Silva this season, he could be in contention for the Ballon d'Or.
Do you know who I think could be Neymar's biggest contender for the Ballon d'Or? Mbappe.
Interesting, he's got the most assists in the Champions League this season, but I don't think he hasn't had the same impact as he has at Monaco. I don't think he's been such a focal point in that.
Blade 444 says, could Manchester United sign Griezmann or Bale? We were actually talking about this a little earlier. We said that Bale with his injuries means that maybe Real would be willing to sell him potentially in the summer. Do you think that's a realistic sort of option?
I think it'd be realistic, of course. For Manchester United, they need to sort of get to that stage where they have that consistent attack, and whether it's Mesut Ozil, I like the idea of Mesut Ozil. I think he's a wonderful player in the right system, especially in a counter-attacking system when he has space to counter-attack. That's perfect for a number 10. Then you can throw Mkhitaryan out wide right. Of course, Antoine Griezmann this season, he's got a lot of stick from the Spanish press and Atletico Madrid fans, but in terms of what he would bring to United, it's that dynamism. What's the right word, right?
Dynamism. There was a question there, I can't remember the name again, was it Broccoli? I think it was. He was saying, can Mourinho win in this media agenda against Manchester United? We did just discuss it there a minute ago, but for one, do you think there is a media agenda against Manchester United? Do you think they're being treated harshly? He's saying that the fans look happy. Do you think the fans are happy? Like I say, I think there's a happy medium.
Yeah, I think it's fine. It's being competitive again. I think the big thing with this media agenda, it's because United are playing defensive and they are beating teams like Tottenham Hotspur were third in the Premier League, United won, and it's seen as like not a result. You go back to that game, I've done a video on my channel about like a tactical analysis of what Man United were doing. They were very, very simple. They went man for man in midfield, they restricted Spurs did nothing in that second half, and United had five massive chances all through either playing long or playing direct. It's a different way to win football games, but it's still effective. And of course it's the versus Jurgen Klopp versus the Pochettino. These are managers that inspire young players, and the media, pardon me, the media now enjoy that over something like Mourinho. Moving on to Baxtom98 on Twitter. What's the sixth biggest league in the world, of course, after the big five? So we've got Russia, Portugal, Holland, or Belgium.
Portugal, maybe?
I'm probably say Portugal. Competitiveness in the Champions League.
Exactly.
I watched the Benfica under-19s on Tuesday, very impressed by some of their players. And you know, if they continue to produce players, and they get Bernardo Silva, now Guardes, you know, very young, top young players that Benfica are producing. So it's one of these things that I think it will be Portugal will be back. But Holland has been a resurgence, obviously Feyenoord winning last season. You know, Belgium doing well, Anderlecht doing well as well. And Russia, no, I'd say Russia's the bottom out of those 400%. Probably rank it Portugal, Holland, Belgium, Russia.
Guys, we're taking questions on Twitter and in the chat here, so do get them in. Football Regista says, when does Dave aim to get a professional managerial job?
Soon.
Soon?
Soon.
You're going to win the Champions League?
Yeah.
We've got one here. Prudvi's talking about Luis Suarez, so remind me of that one.
Yep.
Is there any hope for Swansea to avoid the drop, said Max?
I think there will be. I think they've got some real good players in their squad. The likes of Tammy Abrahams. I like out Mawson at the back. Also, Renato Sanchez isn't a bad player. People have like jumped on him and say, no, he's absolute rubbish. You go back to that season in the Champions League for Benfica, he was awesome in central midfield. It's just about getting him game time. That's what he's not had for the last two seasons. So if I were Swansea manager, I'd be playing him every single week.
Can Brighton stay up, says Finlay Lamb. Nick Knowles. Finlay, can Brighton stay up? I've been impressed with what I've seen of them so far. Remember that one? Tips on analysing football matches from Nick.
Yep.
Do you think Brighton can stay up? When I saw them play against Everton, albeit it was Everton a few weeks back, I was impressed by what I saw. I think they've got the raw foundations almost, but maybe they are just lacking up top.
Yeah, I think that's one thing. I think defensively, I think they're good. Chris Hughton always has a combative side where they do defend in a medium 4-4-2. But I do think I think they'll have a sort of real bad run of form. Pascal Gross at the moment is massively performing. He's like carrying them in a creative sense. When he drops out of favour, when he stops whipping those free kicks onto his teammates' heads, I think they'll start to struggle then.
Joel Bayer, the Cheeky Sport legend himself.
Yeah.
I think it's Joel Bayer. My phone's cracked, so I can't quite see that. He's saying, who do you think's got a better squad, Chelsea or Spurs?
That's a good one. I tell you, the thing with Chelsea is they've got a very weak squad.
And I think Spurs
do have a very weak squad as well. I think it's very, very even. I'd probably say Chelsea if they've got all their players fit, but then again, they've got they haven't had a fit squad this season, so maybe it is Pochettino is doing a bit better than Spurs at the moment. Than Chelsea. So probably go with Spurs.
Yes, it's Cheeky Sport Joel. Give it away, Joel. I love
yes,
it.
Joel.
We love you. Here's one from Nick. Says Dave, are there any tips for analysing football matches?
Yeah, I think what I like to do is watch games back. So I watch it first live, and then I watch the game back. And in terms of slowing it down and watching at your own pace. So for example, you watch a goal go in, it's not about not following the ball, it's following off the ball, and that's quite an interesting point. It's to see the movement off the ball that's very, very interesting. So in terms of football matches, I watch them on my computer again, and I'll scroll back and scroll forward really slowly just to see the little intricacies of what's actually happened, who's created the space, who's played the pass, who's who's going to score the goal. You can see that from deep and how their movement comes together. So yeah, watching games back twice is a very good thing, but only of course if you've got the time.
Only if you've got the time. Thoughts on Sead Kolasinac?
I like Kolasinac. I thought he'd be was strong, physical and good in the tackle. He is that. But what I didn't really expect from him was the attacking side, that he is quite good driving on the ball in terms of goals and assists. He's done very well for Arsenal this season.
Shetty says, do you think Giggs will ever manage Manchester United? No, not happening.
I don't think so. I think that United are looking, they're always going to go for an elite coach now.
Yeah.
And until Giggs does something elsewhere, that would be the only chance that he's going to get it.
Blade 444 says Paul Pogba or KDB? What do you reckon?
Pogba.
KDB every day of the week. There was a question there, who's going to win the Premier League? Again, apologies, I didn't get your username there. Who is going to win the Premier League this season? For me, it's obviously Manchester City. I think they're already, how far are they ahead of United? 8 points ahead of Spurs now.
Four, I think.
So I think
maybe five.
I think, albeit is the criticism warranted from Mourinho, I think he's got to take some of the blame here, but they're falling
five behind.
Yeah, when they're drawing against Liverpool, etc., they're losing to Huddersfield, they're dropping points, they're falling behind. Man City showed no signs of stopping down 5 points, says Rocky. So yeah, I think it's going to be Man City's. Lawrence the Guy says, who's going to win the UCL? We did just answer this.
Madrid, but I do think Spurs and Manchester United will do the best out of the English sides. I think they'll go furthest.
What about Man City?
I think they'll go far, but I think Spurs and United will do better than City this season in the Champions League.
Rocky says United still needs to play City twice.
Yeah, that's the big thing. I think the big thing with the title race is the 12th of December. If United don't win that game, then there's a bit of an issue.
Devil's Following says, are Manchester City currently the best team in Europe? Surely, in an attacking sense.
They're good.
They're good. Very good. Who's better? Name a team who's playing better than them right now.
PSG. Their left back scored a hat-trick, mate, with three shots on target. No, I think City are up there. City are definitely up there.
Here's a great question from Ed Barton. He says, best young player to sign on Football Manager. Is there any little gems?
I think there's a left winger at Santos this season that's 15 when the game starts, and he's absolutely sick. Can't remember what his name is, but left winger Santos, basically the next Neymar. Lately, I think, trying to think who I've signed young players on Foot Manager. I quite like getting the lad from Bayer Leverkusen, the central midfielder, but his name has escaped me right now. But get him as well. He's absolutely boss in central midfield. Yuri Tillsman as well, if you can get him in the second season, always decent.
Nick and Nalez says
Havitz was the player.
Incredible scenes, boys. If you could sign one player for Manchester United, who would you sign next summer? Let's say January. Just be slightly realistic.
It's a tough one, that. I'm trying to think what United need. It's probably an attacker, but then it's like a consistent attacker. There's not a lot of them in world football.
They're going to be available in January. What about next summer then? Next summer when the purse strings are open.
I'd love to get Guardes from PSG, but I don't think they'll let him go now. He's too good.
Lawrence the Guy says best defender in the world.
Right now?
Jan Vertonghen.
Absolutely not. Do you not see Jan Vertonghen get done by Anthony Martial?
Davinson Sanchez?
I can't argue with that, but I thought you would say Adam Murrell. No, I don't think he's the best centre back in the world.
Best
right
centre back
now.
In the world. Wow, that's a great question. The usual candidates you're looking at, Sergio Ramos.
Yeah. PK's had a good year. I'd say Ramos, but at the moment, obviously, Rail are out of form, but I'd say he is the best defender in the world.
Vertonghen. Thoughts on Strange Things Series 2, says Ollie Shep.
I've only watched the first one and a half episodes.
I'm up to the last episode.
Don't say
I'm
anything.
I'm not going to give any spoilers. I think it's very good. I'm enjoying it, but it's not
as good as the first one.
It's never going to be in the bracket of, say, The Wire, Mad Men, Sopranos, Breaking Bad. It's never going to be that sort of show. So I think if you accept it for what it is, an enjoyable TV show, that's fine. It's a little bit repetitive for me. Why don't we discuss very quickly, Mick 90 saying, who would you replace Poch and Kane? When? They go. When?
When are they going?
Stephen Howson also said, suck my foes. Golight Tonight says, Strange Things, most overrated show ever. Potentially. It's just a good show.
I started watching Bojack Horseman.
Oh,
and I didn't like it at the start. It's quite good.
Do you know what my favourite show is right now? Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty's amazing. Have you not watched it all yet?
Oh yeah, I've watched it.
Yeah, it's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
What ground are you? What pub are you in? It seems like a decent spot, said Izzy. I'm not 100% sure. We are in
the quarry.
We're in the quarry, I believe it's called. We just finished a football game.
It's south of the river though, so watch out.
You'll see on YouTube soon enough. Rick and Morty is next level. Howson said, what's up, my friend?
The pickle episode on Rick and Morty is just unbelievable.
So Mick said, who should replace Poch and Kane? First off, I don't think either of them are going. I think they're going to stay for a long time. So I don't think we need to think about that anytime soon. Oh, that's a good question from Football Regista. How far is Yaya Touré away from Lampard and Gerrard in terms of his Premier League legacy?
I think he had 3 good years where he was pretty much unplayable, but I think Gerrard, Lampard and Paul Scholes and Ryan Giggs have that longevity that's a little bit longer than Yaya Touré, but it's very decent.
What's this? A question on the Twitters here. Yeah, well, favourite pub food, what do you reckon?
Burger and chips, solid.
Boring, that. You've got to go for some sort of pie, fish and chips.
Oh, pie and mash is decent.
Pie and mash, sure. Is Loz a true Scouser, says Mick?
No.
Has he ever burned out a car or stole a wallet?
No.
Lawrence is not the type of guy to do those things. We've got a question here from Van Verma, who said, how long will Dybala remain at Juventus?
Not long.
Where's he going?
Not long. Barca, probably, eventually. I think he'd be a good Suarez replacement. I think he could work quite well in tandem with Lionel Messi as a two.
We had a question there a minute ago about Suarez. I think it was Prudvi who'd said, what do you think about Suarez's form? He looks a little bit off the pace now. Maybe he doesn't look up to 100% fitness.
Yeah, maybe that's it. He's played a lot of football over the last few seasons and he's played at a really high level. But again, it's the system. I think with this Barca system, Messi's the false nine, so Suarez has to start from that wide position and then come in. Suarez could have done that when he's 25, 26, 27. Now he's coming to a little bit, the back end of his career, not as pacey. But then again, Valverde needs to just find a way of getting him playing well again. I think that's a big thing for. Do you want the other question?
There was a question there.
Who should be next United manager? Pochettino?
Yeah.
Ancelotti?
Yeah.
Simeone.
Ooh, what do you reckon that one? Surely, I said this to Stephen Howson, who's probably still watching, on his podcast last weekend. Pochettino would surely be the perfect manager for Manchester.
I think Pochettino is the realistic option.
No, not realistic.
I think he's realistic, but I think the best would be for me, Simeone. I absolutely love what Simeone's done over the last few seasons.
What do you think of Ancelotti? Would you not take him?
Yeah, no, I think I'd take Ancelotti as well. I think post Mourinho, either you need that big personality like a Simeone, like a Pochettino, or you need someone chilled out like, of course, the main man Carlo Ancelotti. I'd like Carlo Ancelotti. I think he's a brilliant manager, but he needs the right environment, and United could be that perfect place.
5 more minutes, guys, and then we're going to wrap up this Q&A, so do get your questions in on Twitter. Okay, this is a weird one, said Kevin, but I am horrible. Am I horrible for wanting to kick my girlfriend's little brother in the head? Yes, Kevin. You don't want to kick anyone in the head.
Kevin, that's mean.
Don't be kicking anyone in the head. That's just... it's a little bit psychopathic.
We've had something in from Nathan on Twitter, at YoungN8T. Given your background noise... on normal pods, this should be in.
Occasionally, we like to film outside. I see, I get it, okay. But guys, we're bringing your podcast, you know, we're doing our best. Sometimes we're out and about. You know, we're out on the bloody river and that.
Yeah, on the bloody river.
And we're just like trying to record stuff when we can, you know? before I start, Greg Slav said, honest opinion of Brian. The true joy. He's top lad. He's an absolute
good guy. Great, great guy.
You literally get, if you ever meet him, you'll never meet a nicer guy. Yeah. He'll definitely be buying you a few pints, so can't complain about Brian. Great lad. The question there from Tom, can Zaha perform for a better team, i.e. top 6? Will he be transferred? I'd said in the summer I'd love to see him come to Spurs. I think it'd be a great option off the bench. Gives that speed, gives that penetration, but he did sign a new contract at Crystal Palace. Do you think he could do a job elsewhere?
I think he could, yeah. I think that there's certain teams that he'd fit. I think he would fit someone like Chelsea. I think he'd fit someone like Tottenham. I don't think he's right for Manchester United. I don't think he'd fit in at all well there. There was obviously issues off the field as well as on the field. And he has a ceiling, but someone like Pochettino could elevate him past what you expect from him. So I think Pochettino would be the perfect guy for Wilf Zaha. Similar for Luke Shaw. Both should pretty much be like, get me to Spurs.
Okay, well, there you have it. That was the Q&A. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm sure you all loved that background noise going on at the pub the whole time. We expect a few 3-star reviews this week. We'll pay the price for that. But guys, thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed listening all the same. And we'll see you on Monday for the weekend review, a big weekend of action coming up. So we'll speak on Monday. Until then, have a bloody great weekend.
Thank you very much to Adam and Dave there. Brilliant. Go follow those guys. Who doesn't love sitting by the river answering people's questions? Maybe a serial killer? Anyway, Chris, let's get straight down to it. We can continue our Europa League / Europe chat. First of all, Everton, what you described as a fucking mess tonight as we record, it's not looking great, especially if Unsworth is the manager who is best qualified to take over. He's not showing that, or he's not managed to show that yet. It sounds disrespectful the way that I phrased the question, but Everton don't look to have improved as they lose 3-0 to Lyon and sit bottom of their group on just 1 point.
Yeah, there was a quite unfortunate injury to Cuco Martina. He was put in a neck brace and is going to be observed overnight in hospital. So it's just a terrible night all round when you consider that they also lost Morgan Schneiderlin to a red card. They just look very disorganised as a team. That's the moment where I think it starts to look like too big a job for Unsworth, because I don't think he's had this kind of pressure. It's a very different atmosphere coaching under 23s to senior teams. And that's one of the reasons that Lee Carsley has never sought out a top job. He's been linked to a few, in fact, but he prefers to work with England and work with, I'm trying to think which club he's the under 23 manager at. It might be Birmingham, actually. But yeah, that for me is another sort of, you know, piece of evidence for why it really can't be Unsworth to take them forward. Mm. I think there are players in that squad, guys like Ashley Williams, who I think need a rest more than anything. We've talked about, you know, the positives of inertia relative to title wins and things on this podcast in the past. I think you look at Williams and he almost looks punch drunk a little bit. Yeah. His style of defending, I think, is on the way out anyway, personally. It's very aggressive, almost to the point of a fault. Sometimes it crosses that line like it did with Lyon last time.
It's a little too active almost, in a way, where it's a bit more like, I guess it's a very English style of defending, where it's sort of like we praise him for doing something rather than maybe showing the self-control to not do something.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you put someone like him next to Mason Holgate, I don't think it does anything positive for Holgate. In general, I think, yeah, the Europa League will be over for them soon. I think they've only got two games after this now, one against Atalanta at home. There's a potential to maybe build some good feeling with a victory. It obviously won't play any influence on keeping them in the competition. But I think what they have to accept is that, you know, there's a strong chance as it sits right now that they go down. And that's not to say that I think it happens, more that I think they need to be self-aware of the situation they're in, because the longer they kid themselves, the longer they take to appoint a manager, the more the rot sets in and the harder it becomes to turn around. You just need to look at Sunderland under Sam Allardyce a few years ago. He actually came into that job, I would say, relatively early into the season in terms of it. The halfway stage hadn't arrived yet, and he kept himself up by the skin of his teeth. And that was with the January window as well. Now, you can tell me that Everton have all this quality and Sigurdsson and all this. I don't see it at this precise moment. I never saw a £45 million player in Gylfi Sigurdsson to begin with. I don't see where you fit all of those number 10s in, for starters. And then where you try and build a team that looks serviceable, it's going to need to be one that focuses on defending first and then looks to try and exploit the likes of Morales and Niasse's pace, because that's its big problem for me, is it doesn't have a gear shift. It's got a lot of players that can create stuff, but not many that could spring on a team with real devastation.
And that maybe is part of the problem, isn't it, Nico, is that actually, you know, we see the likes of Sean Dyche, who are obviously going to come in, possibly will come in at this point, and probably by the time that we get this out, it probably will be in. Do you think that he's a ready-made solution, or is it again that there are so many problems, or so many smaller problems? He could be the man. You know, it could go a number of ways. Either he's not able to harness what the squad has, or he's able to boil down what the squad has and harness some of the basics that he has from a smaller group of players, like he has at Burnley in many ways.
I mean, I think he would definitely keep them up, which is an obvious positive. But in terms of progressing his own style, as well as achieving the aspirations that maybe Everton set out at the beginning of this season, definitely not. And I think if you look at the football style, or the style of football rather, that Sean Dyche has perpetuated at Burnley, you know, there is much to be said about it that he has achieved with a, you know, what we see to be not the most talented group of players. But at the same time, I think there are, from what people, you know, who analyze football through statistical methods have garnered about teams like Sean Dyche's Burnley, is that they tend to overperform some of the deeper metrics because of the way that they defend, as opposed to anything spectacular that the manager is doing. And what I mean by that is they defend exceptionally deep, and they allow shots where teams generally don't like to allow shots, you know, within the box. They allow possession, you know, within zone 14 and other places like that. But they rely heavily on block shots. And I think if you're doing that at a Burnley, then that's okay, because your only expectation is to really avoid relegation. And he's done that successfully. You know, he's done good things at that level. But I think, as maybe I've spoken about before, the things that maybe separate the different classes of football manager in terms of the types that get maybe the Barcelona jobs as opposed to the ones that get, you know, the relegation battling or the mid-table jobs, is, as maybe we were speaking about earlier on the podcast, is their philosophy of football. And I don't see anything within Sean Dyche's current resume to suggest that he would evolve a style of football if given, you know, more resources to do so. And obviously that means players. I think he would continue to resort to the thing that has brought him success in his career so far. Not that that's a negative thing, but I don't necessarily think that that would match up to the lofty expectations that Everton have set for themselves this summer. And I think Chris speaks a lot of sense in the manner that, you know, that squad, as we talked about before, was kind of really poorly put together in the summer by misspending the Lukaku money by getting a bunch of players that would supposedly replace, you know, his quote unquote gold talent. So I think the biggest thing for whoever it is that fills that role is not necessarily playing into this idea that each club has a very specific style of football, but rather building a style of football in general that is sustainable for Everton to finish within the mid-table, which I think is well within the possibility given the amount of talent that's at Everton. Is Sean Dyche the man to do that? I'm not so sure.
Very good answer. Something that we can't cover tonight is obviously the few elements of what's going on for Patrice Evra at the Europa League level, where he's been sent off before the game started. We don't know all the details. We don't really want to comment on that because there may be things that it's charged by that or sort of motivated by, which actually are a lot more sinister, not from Patrice's side, but from the side of the fans. Obviously, what has happened there is he has kicked what most people allege is one of his own fans. And you have to imagine that, especially for someone like Patrice Evra, to do something like that, it would take something quite serious to happen in the first place, especially considering the player's demeanour and maybe considering elements of how he is on a day-to-day basis. Still got to say, though, I find it very unusual the amount of Manchester United fans, or just the amount of fans of Patrice Evra in general, who seem to be tweeting jokingly, hashtag I love this game, as if violence within sport is a joke in any way. An unusual response, if you put it that way. And then finally, obviously, there's rumours going out in tomorrow's papers, or today's papers by the time this comes out, Chris, that Antonio Conte could already be in for the sack at Chelsea. This has obviously been printed by Marca, so therefore very little validity. But there is talk that Antonio Conte wants out at Chelsea, could be on his way out. There's talk that Montella is not long for the job at AC Milan. And there was obviously talk before that Antonio Conte was interested in the job. Do you think that there is a series of dominoes here which can fall, even if they're dominoes which might take a whole half season or maybe even a season to fall?
Well, that was the funny thing, wasn't it? In the summer, he spent a decent amount of time talking about, you know, not wanting to have a Mourinho season after the Premier League title win that they managed to secure last season. I think this, in some ways, shouldn't come as a surprise, because I think if you look at, firstly, his style of play, and then also the approach Chelsea have with its managers under Roman Abramovich, it's rarely been a long-term investment. It's always been about, okay, this isn't working, let's change it. And in some ways, I kind of admire that, because it takes a lot of ball to think that there's always something better out there for you in the football club. I think it works well at a time when really a lot of clubs struggle with a long-term appointment. I think Arsenal are very much the unicorn in the field of ponies with that one. And look how much it's done for them. Absolutely jackdiddly squit. I think what is concerning as well is just the way they performed against Roma. It was so devoid of anything you would associate with Conte. And you just wonder if, and we've talked about this, you and I, before, be it in the documentary that you made or previously on this podcast, that Conte is intense. I think that we're not shedding insight there. The problem with that intensity is that it involves him putting his foot on the pedal to the floor at all times. And so you look at Juventus and the fact that they don't do well in the Champions League under him. I mean, they did okay in the group stages 1 year, but they only had like a 2 year sample size. And then Allegri comes in and they make the final. And then they make it again last year. I think that's as much as an achievement for Allegri as it is an indictment on what Conte is like in terms of managing situations. And he already himself spoke out about the size of the squad. And I think if someone like him is making those kind of comments, it's almost a self-awareness of what kind of style he has and what he's going to need to do that. So I think in a lot of ways, for me personally, looking at the situation, there's almost a reluctance, almost an acceptance, if you will, that this is the consequence of Chelsea and what they chose to do in the summer, and the fact that he can't necessarily manage situations well. And that's why I think we're seeing stories like we are today with Charlie Musonda wanting to potentially leave in January, assuming those are true, because he's not necessarily someone that can manage situations and use them to his advantage.
That's a very good point. I mean, tactically, it would certainly also make a lot of sense, wouldn't it, Nico? But just in terms of, you know, everything that would possibly go on at AC Milan, because you've got, you know, you've got a squad that's more or less ready there. However, if they don't make it to the Champions League, there is talk that because of FFP, etc., they would have to sell a few players. It would be interesting to see what would happen if Conte came in, obviously.
Yeah, I think, you know, I hadn't really thought about this prior to you mentioning it to me, you know, his return to AC Milan, but I think it would actually be really good for both him and the club. And I think it would fit into the idea that Chelsea is trying to perpetuate as sort of a modern club. And what I mean by that is I think it would be good for Conte because he, as much as I maybe like to detest the general saying, you know, the general idea that there is, you know, massive differences in terms of nuance between leagues. Mm-hmm. I think his defensively centered approach and the one that he built, the dynasty that he built Juventus being defensively centered approach, was one that really worked because of the tactical nuance of that league. And I think it would really work for AC Milan because they've essentially, with the players that they bought, given him a blank slate. And I think that sort of goes back to the idea that I was talking about previously, which is building an identity of football. I think people tend to believe that that takes far longer than it actually does. And I think if you're building sort of an academy identity, then it can take, yeah, maybe 20 or 30 or possibly even 40 or longer years. But I think in the case of Chelsea, and this relates to Milan as well, is that they have generally kept the core of, you know, the core of their players the same for the past couple of years, in the sense that, you know, under Jose Mourinho is a counterattacking side, and they obviously went through different periods with him, and under Antonio Conte it's been a counterattacking team. So they brought in different coaches, which is, you know, the easiest position to replace, considering it's just one player or just one piece of the equation, and they've continued to perpetuate similar tactical ideas with a squad that has a concrete identity. They just change it slightly depending on the manager. And I think with AC Milan, since they've gone on this shopping spree of buying all these different players, if they were to bring in someone like Conte, they would have to adhere to the rules of FFP and sell a few players, which would ideally be the players that he wouldn't want. And then he would get to come in and perpetuate his defensive-minded ideals to a league that he's already familiar with. So I think it'd be a really good move. And for all the talk of short-sightedness from Chelsea, I think they're actually, like I mentioned, operating as sort of a modern club by having a very specific and core group of players that can do one thing very well, and then changing, you know, the cheapest piece of the puzzle to fit, you know, the current tactical trends or the current managerial trends. So I think, you know, it is very intelligent from both of these clubs.
It's an interesting view. It's a very interesting view on it. I'll be interested to see what you guys think about the approach that Chelsea are taking as well. Let us know before the weekend review. We will be talking about everything that's going on all over Europe right now, and then obviously that comes the international break for a lot of people, so it's getting to that point in the season where we can begin to look at how teams are shaping up. 10-11 games in, now teams are starting to flesh out, and there's something there that we can begin to put some flesh around those bones. Chris, it's been lovely to have you tonight. What are you working on at the moment? What are you writing that we can tell people about?
Something on Graham Potter, the Östersunds coach, who has taken a fairly unconventional path to success and has flown in the face of Sam Allardyce's claims that there are no opportunities for English coaches.
Yeah, yes, because that is obviously that's a very charged statement in the first place. What about you, Nico? What are you writing about?
Maybe some things not so football related, some music and some general pop culture criticisms or analysis, and also obviously some football related content that you'll be seeing very soon. So just follow me on Twitter if you want to see that sort of stuff, at @Nico_O'Morales.
Catch Nico and Kristen both trolling Arsenal fans this evening. Someone's just tweeting out, tell me why Jack Wilshere isn't class, to which the TF3 account replied, I speak from experience when I say potential and achievement should not be confused. Tonight showed neither. We would love to hear some positive views on Arsenal on the podcast.
Dave's a bloody rascal.
Yep. Have a go. Come find us on Twitter. We'd love to see you guys there. And come find us over the weekend. You can let us know your views. We can put them out through the podcast. You can share them with the community. And it'd be good to have you guys contributing in some way. Until Monday, enjoy the weekend's football. We'll see you there. And don't forget to join us on the live show. We'll see you guys Monday. Have a good one. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.